Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Yo, welcome into the House of L podcast. I am Lawrence Holmes. Thanks so much for hanging out on today's episode. I'm so excited for you to hear the episode that we have today. I feel like I say that every week, and it's true. Mainly because I bring people on to the podcast that I think are super interesting, and my goal is that you're going to think they're as interesting as I do, and maybe you're going to think that they're more interesting than I do. This week, our guest, John Hansen, has lived some lives, man. And he is out here in this business doing it real big. And I genuinely like and respect the way that he goes about doing his business. And you're going to find out a lot about him in this episode. I'll get back to more on that in a second. We are brought to you by Aurelio's. Yay! Aurelio's Pizza. It's the sauce. You know the deal. You know how I feel about Joe and that great pizza that they have. Summertime is a good time to look for a job. If you're thinking you got a little one that, or you yourself are looking for a part-time job, working at Aurelio's is terrific. They treat you really well. AureliosPizza.com. Find a location near you. Order up some za. I've said before, as much as I love their pizza, they have really good basket of fries, and they have really good desserts. And they're one of the oldest pizza places in the world, man. They're just great. AureliosPizza.com. John Hansen does a little bit of everything. He's a true testament to the idea of being able to do whatever. He can do weather. He can read hard news and cover hard news. He can do sports. And he's been doing a great job with the Blackhawks since he got that job. He can do entertainment. There's pretty much nothing in the business of broadcasting that John Hansen hasn't done and can't do. I always talk with students about being versatile and the importance of being able to be everything, because now everyone is everything in broadcasting. If you think that you're going to be able to just be someone who's on the radio, nope. If you think that you're just going to be a writer, nope. Everyone is everything. And John is an excellent example of this. He's working over at WCIU. He's doing the show over at WGN Radio. He's still working for the Blackhawks. He's helping out with Block Club. He's everywhere. Savoir Faire is everywhere. You get 2 points if you know that reference, but only two. I can only spare you 2 points. The way that he got to be Mr. Everything was fascinating to me. So I wanted to ask him about that. And that's what we talk about this week on the House of L podcast. First of all, it's so good to see you. It's really good to see you. You're one of my favorite people in our business. So getting a chance to have you on the podcast has always been a goal.
That's nice of you to say. I think you're one of the best people in the business too. And we always have fun together when we get to see each other. And it's obviously been stymied by the pandemic, but I'm happy to be on this podcast. You're killing it, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. I want to ask you about being at Blackhawks games, and that's where I want to start. What's that like, and how did you end up in that position?
Yeah, so started actually about 11 years ago. I moved back to Chicago, and I had known Gene Honda. We both went to the same university and college radio station, definitely different decades, but we kind of knew each other through our alumni network, and they were looking for a new backup for Gene Honda. And, you know, we had talked to each other. He's like, hey, we're looking. I actually had auditioned for the Cubs PA job that opened up. Remember when they had that big competition?
Yes.
And people just like submitted YouTube videos. So I didn't get it, but I was close. And so Gene knew all that we were talking through. So he's like, why don't you come audition to be my backup? And so they brought me to the United Center. And I think like McDonough and Blunk and a couple of the guys sat in a skybox. And Michael Bublé concert was like setting up on the floor. And they're like, just get on the horn and read a couple things. It was a very weird setup. I was like 25 years old too. So I was almost too young to know how big of a deal that was, right? And so Blackhawks goal, his fifth of the season, did a couple of those reads. Got a call a couple of days later, like, all right, you're going to be Gene's backup. So for like 8 years, I would do like, I don't know, 6 or 7 games, right? When there's overlap with the White Sox, or when Gene does the Final Four, or he does the Maui Invitational. So it wasn't much, but they started having in-arena hosts, the people on the video boards. And this is like very much like my everything that's happened in my career. I just like kind of let them know. I'm like, hey, I kind of want to try that once. They're like, okay, that sounds great. You know, you do TV work. So I tried it. This is in like March of 2019, I think, and did it one game. And then they were like, all right, you're going to do that from now on. So can you do every game? And I was also working a morning show at the time. And I was like, yes, I can. Even though I knew that was going to set up some interesting 11 p.m. get home, wake up at 2 a.m. things. But it's a blast. I don't know. I love, you know, when I used to go to Hawks games as a kid, first of all, I would listen to Harvey Wittenberg and then eventually Gene Honda, who were, you know, PA announcers, and like just dream of doing something like that. But I've always liked sports, not only for just, you know, the breaking down what the X's and the O's and everything like that. I like the theater of it all. I love the way a crowd, the rising action of, you know, crowd energy. I even like the upsetness, you know, when people get pissed at a ref or so. There's just such a cool vibe at hockey games. So to be kind of like plugged into that and contribute to that in a way, obviously not as big as the players, but like in my own small way, it's really cool.
It seems like you're having a really good time. It's interesting that you point out the idea of, yeah, I had this morning show and that made for some interesting scheduling quirks. I can relate. I, at one point, was doing a radio show at night and then a streaming television national show in the morning. And you're right. Like, you start counting sleep. Like, you're like, okay, if I can get home by such and such time, then I can get this amount of sleep and I can still be normal the next morning. But the weird part about it is, I always say this to students, you kind of need to say yes to things that you really want to explore, right?
100%. And that's the thing, is I think we're at this interesting point where I love how people are now talking like, first of all, pay me what I earn or what I'm worth, and treat me like I'm worth something. Like, I'm really proud of like labor movements that are like, you know, I've earned this. But at the same time, like, there is this process where I feel like you still have to put in the hours to get to that point. And I still feel that way, right? Like, I have like 4 great jobs I love and they're wonderful, but like, I still feel like I got to grind it. I'm sure you're doing ways too, Lawrence, even though you're this big shot now. Like, there's still that grinder mentality that you have. And yeah, I mean, I've been back in Chicago media, like, I've been here for like 11 years and it's just been a constant grind. And you have to, you know, like when I started filling in at WGN Radio, it was like overnight Christmas Eve to Christmas, right? And you just do it because you say, this isn't exactly what I want now, but I know this is the step to get there. And then that kind of drives you through. Of course, there's not, like, the puck would like drop at the second period, and I'd always look at the clock and be like, this is when I'm normally in bed. And we've got two more periods to get through post game, the drive home. And that would hurt sometimes. And it's hard to complain about this stuff because they're jobs that everyone, you know, loves and would want. But yeah, there were times it was not the best. But yeah, you got to grind through. You got to do that stuff.
So what's the energy like at a Blackhawks game?
Well, you know, there's no doubt the team has struggled, right? And it's been a crazy year in many ways. Fans are still really into it. I mean, there are games, obviously, especially if the Hawks haven't played well and they're down early, it makes our jobs a little bit tougher to keep people super engaged throughout the whole game. But like the Hawks fans that are in that building, the loyal ones are like into it, right? Like I still think that hockey is one of those sports. Obviously it's better if you're making the playoffs and in those runs that they were for the long, but there still is an exciting energy. I mean, anytime that goal horn goes off, there's just this natural explosion of energy. And I think that's kind of like the nature of hockey. It's often this slow build to, and then out of nowhere, you know, magic happens. So I actually think we've had some really great crowds. And while the Hawks record, of course, is not where you'd want it to be, they've been in a lot of games. They've given up one goal leads late in the third period. They've lost a lot of games in overtime. So I think that helps. Like they've been fairly competitive. And I know that's going to sound to people like I'm trying to paint this rosy picture. But I truly think that. I mean, there obviously have been some games that have been out of hand early, but for the most part, I feel like the crowd's really been into it. And there have been some great games this year.
Did you grow up playing hockey?
No, I didn't play hockey, but I skated. So it's funny because I always could skate really well. I know that's like three quarters of the battle, but I never really played hockey. But I did start playing hockey when I moved back to Chicago with the Chicago Gay Hockey Association. They at the time, like 12 years ago, it was one team. And now they have like three or four teams. They play in all sorts of leagues. They travel around the world. But I knew I could skate, and I had kind of gotten to know some of the guys. I forget exactly how. And they're like, come try it, right? And I started doing rat hockey like on Wednesday nights at like 11:30 p.m. at McFetrich in Lincolnwood or wherever it is. Fumes out of the Zamboni room. Like the worst hockey playing situations, but like that's what rat hockey is, and that's what league hockey is. And I literally showed up to the first practice they had. They're like, can you skate backwards? I'm like, yep. They're like, all right, you're playing defense. So I got a sense of it, right? I haven't played in a couple of years. Again, that morning show life that I was on for 5 years is not conducive to playing hockey for those late nights. But yeah, baseball is what I played growing up. Baseball was my number one. I played it. I wasn't great at it, but I was an umpire and like took that seriously. I was like
what age group were you umpire for?
Oh, well, I mean, I started it with machine pitch, right? So when I was 11, I think I was umpiring 8-year-olds, and then that slowly went up eventually, like pony leagues and stuff like that. I was really into it.
What did you like about it?
I don't know. Honestly, I hated it the first year I did it. My parents kind of made me do it. They're like, go, you're really into baseball. Why don't you try this? And it's adults yelling at you, which is like an 11-year-old is shockingly horrible, right? Like, even if you're a confident kid. But I honestly think it kind of made me really good at dealing with adults at a younger age, and like having a little bit of a spine. I think, honestly, I love the sport of baseball. I've always loved it. I like the theater of it, right? Like, I think it's fun. I think it's the action of being an umpire and having that quote unquote control without trying to, you know, influence the game, of course. But like, there's a performative nature to it. I think every major league baseball, I mean, we see this all the time with certain umpires and referees in every league. There is a performative nature to it. And you like kind of being that center role, right? I was either like, I'm either going to be an announcer in baseball or I'm going to be somewhere involved in this sporting world where people have eyes on me, except playing the sports. Like I knew that was out. So, but I loved umpiring, man. It was so much fun, and I did it for a long time. And I honestly kind of considered maybe like really going for it.
Really?
Never. Yeah. I was pretty good too. Like I had a great strike zone. I had a good strike call. I once struck my brother out looking on three strikes in his championship game when he's 5 years younger than me, made him sob, but that's what a fair umpire does. No, I was really into it. And baseball is like my true love. Like in hockey was like kind of my number two growing up because my dad took me to a lot of games. You know, it's interesting. Both my brothers are collegiate Division III football players, great athletes. Like they were all state high school football players. They didn't like going to sporting events. They lived that life and they didn't like going to the sporting events. My dad, I was the only one who actually wanted to go. Like when I was going to a Cubs game, my dad would like tell us when we had tickets, right? I would like the 15 days beforehand, I would make like these little, you know, like at Christmas countdowns, you have those little strips of cardboard.
Yes.
And you make like a chain. I'd make like a red and blue chain counting down the days till I got to go to Wrigley Field for a Cubs game. And I keep score every game, that even games I wasn't at, I keep score. I mean, sports has really been a big part of my life and it's centered around baseball, but I just have always loved being at the arena. Like, even though I'm not a Sox fan, I loved going to Comiskey to hear Gene Honda's introductions of Paul Konerko and Frank Thomas.
Frank Thomas.
And the fireworks, because the Sox know how to put on a show. And yeah, I don't know.
Where did the skating come from if you weren't playing hockey when you were younger?
I don't know. We'd go to like Downers Grove has like a little ice arena. We'd go there and there's like a Seven Bridges outdoor ice arena. I don't know. We weren't like a super athletic family, but we always did stuff. I was not a video games person. You know, when my two best friends, they love video games. I would sit there and announce. So they'd play whatever sports game, we'd mute it and I'd announce the game. Never played, very rarely. So for me, it was like, we're going outside. We play baseball and I lived on a cul-de-sac. So the sewers became the bases and we played baseball. We played, you know, football and we skated in the winter and stuff. Just not a ton, but just enough to learn it. Right. I don't think we skated a ton, but I just, you know, when you do something, when you're 3, 4, or 5, it's way easier to pick up and you keep that for life. But yeah, I was, I would announce when they played like Goldeneye.
Really?
Right. Like, yes. They'd be like, you want to play? I'm like, no, but you guys should pick Moonraker Lasers and I'll like get some proximity mines places. And I will just love to announce it. I don't know.
Man, that's outstanding. I
was a quirky kid, I'll tell you that.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. A couple episodes back, I talked with Paul Conrad about youth baseball and you talking about youth umpiring. I think I'm fascinated by all of it, like by how it's grown from when I was a kid playing in Jackie Robinson West to now like this travel baseball thing that's happened over the last 15 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
What was the best experience that you had as an umpire dealing with youth sports, and what was the worst part of it?
The guy who ran the Downers Grove Umpire League was also a coach, or who our boss essentially was also a coach, which is like, of course, a terrible conflict of interest, but I'm sure they were just, you know, whatever, we need a guy to run the umpires. And he would try and lean on us hard, right? Like during games. And, get in arguments, right? It was weird because he's the guy training us how to be umpires and here he's the coach yelling at us. So tossing your boss from a game was a really bad experience, really. And I had to do it. And I don't know if he was like testing me, but, and an umpire also, you know, when you F up, right? And you, in baseball, there's that you wouldn't overturn a call. A lot of times you're the only kid out there umpiring a game, or you're trying to umpire with maybe one other person. So I can just distinctly remember a swing and a foul tip that I called strike three, but it was a foul tip into the ground. It should have been, you know, a foul ball. I knew it right after I had called the guy out, and parents are just screaming at you. And it's the worst feeling for like an 11-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, whatever, to just have parents feel such vitriol for a mistake you made in a kid's baseball game.
In for their kid.
Yes. And like, I messed up. I know it. And maybe in that moment I should have said, hey, hold on. I know. But like, you know, in bait, you know, umpires were always taught, you know, stick with your guns and first instinct. Then you start questioning things, but that lingers for like many pitches, many innings. Best experiences. I actually got to do a game at Miller Park after it opened up. and I don't know what some league was having, maybe an all-star game, a northern suburb versus southern Wisconsin suburb all-star game at Miller Park. And they called me up there, and that was really cool. I think I was in maybe 18 or 19. I got to umpire it for like a 16-year-old league. I don't know. That was really cool. I mean, it wasn't packed or anything, but, you know, at an actual baseball stadium, being behind the plate in a gorgeous stadium at that, that was probably my coolest experience.
Is there a stadium that you haven't been to that you want to go to?
I really want to go to I've been to a lot of them. I love AT&T Park, San Francisco.
Have you been to PNC?
Yes, I have been to PNC.
It's
that
my favorite
experience.
It's my favorite place.
Good. Yeah, it's a great one. Camden Yards, probably.
Okay.
My dad's been there, and I lived in DC, and I always wanted to go out there, but I never did. Just, I mean, that was kind of the one, right, that changed how stadiums were done when they built that. And I would like to see that. I've been to Fenway. I haven't been to the new Yankee. Never went to old Yankee. I went to the old Fulton County Stadium many times growing up, and I went to the old Tiger Stadium with the overhang in the outfield. I don't know. I love stadiums. I don't know. You're probably the same way. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are too. It's like any stadium. I just love looking around, walking the concourse, getting the feel, going to the old Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. Went to a lot of games there in hockey. And, I don't know. It's just fun to explore a new place.
Seeing the designs of the different places is always fascinating to me. Like, what does a particular city value in its fan base, like what they want the experience to be? Like, those are some of the cool parts. And the thing that we get as people that work in the business, we get to be in these places when they're quiet. And I love that level of access where you can kind of walk around and get a feel for the actual physical plant of the place.
100%. Yeah. There is, I mean, like, one of my favorite things is when we're there so early for Hawks games is like going down the tunnel and being on the ice level. There's not a soul in the bowl. You can't see anyone. Lights are pretty dim and they have just zammed the ice. And it's just got like this amazing like shimmer. And you know, it's like the quiet before the storm. I don't know. There is that. I think maybe it's the anticipation of it. And you know what that place sounds like at its loudest. And just to know that you could hear a pin drop. Also, a lot of times, like when we're rehearsing or doing stuff and there is like a practice going on, you can act. And this was during COVID times too. You can actually hear what they're saying to each other during games. It was so strange and unusual to be in an empty stadium like that, but it was a unique perspective for sure.
So obviously you were doing play-by-play of video games. So broadcasting was on your mind. When did it go from a hobby to, I think I want to do this?
I think I always wanted to do it. And I had a camcorder when I was a kid. My parents like had a hand-me-down one that I would like bring to school and interview people. I loved game shows. My dad built me a Wheel of Fortune wheel. And I like, my third grade teacher was like, that's cool. Why don't you be a Wheel of Fortune host for an hour in class? And like, I just had a lot of adults that really fostered that creativity, which of course is a great point of privilege. To have a lot of adults who were like, hey, you're kind of creative. But here's the interesting thing is I went to college to be a history teacher.
So did I by the way.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. My degree at DePaul is in history.
I believe that. Yeah, that makes sense. But I was like, I love microphones. I did stage and theater and everything in high school. I worked at my high school radio station. And, you know, I don't know. My mom, who was a public school teacher, an art teacher, she would be like, are you sure? Like, you'd be a great teacher. You could always go back and get your teaching degree. And then one day in sophomore year of college, my buddy in the English class was like, you have a good sounding voice. And we were like reading aloud from a book. He's like, come to the radio the college radio station, WPGU. And I went that day and the person who did the sports reports didn't show up in a very college radio station fashion. And they're like, go ahead. Right. And I did it. And I was hooked and changed my major to broadcast journalism. And then, you know, became a news director, and I ended up working down in Champaign-Urbana as the, I stayed at the station as a general manager for 3 or 4 years right out of college because the position opened up. So I was basically like a glorified babysitter of the student radio station. as the professional adult in the room at 22 years old.
What was that experience really, like?
It was interesting. You know, I think I'm someone who like really does like to chase new opportunities, but in my heart of hearts, I'm a homebody. So like Champaign-Urbana, U of I was such an amazing experience for me. Not only just like getting to do radio and stuff, but it was kind of like where I became who I was, where I became comfortable in my own skin. And honestly, when I got the opportunity, when they're like, I was going to graduate like in 3 months and they're like, hey, this job opened up. It just felt right to stay just emotionally, personally. I wasn't ready to leave. I had just came out like my senior year of college. And I was like, no, I want to like live in this a little bit longer. I didn't have the same experiences that a lot of my friends had in high school where they figured out everything. And then, you know, it's old hat by college. So I kind of was like, no, I finally have like a group of friends here. So I stayed and it ended up being the best decision ever. I kind of got, I call it college too. I stayed there for like 4 extra years and like, yeah, I still party, but not as much. Right. And I made some money and I kind of learned that professional atmosphere on a little bit of a curve, I guess you could say.
And you could live like there fairly inexpensively, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah. Very inexpensively. And, you know, just kind of continue to figure out me and what that was. And the best part about it is the first thing I did is as the manager, I was like, look, WPGU is a college radio station that has so many alumni in so many places across the country. Let's really reestablish an alumni network. And of course I was doing it for the benefit of the students, but I was also young and knew it would benefit me too, selfishly. So I was like reaching out to, that's how I got to know Gene Honda, you know, Charlie Meyerson, who was a WGN radio news director at the time. Rick Kempfer, who had, you know, produced Stephen Gary for so long, and Mary Vandeveld, who's at WG, like all these people, Andrea Darlis, just like reaching out to these people, you know, with a little, not just like, hey, I'm John, just like, hey, I'm representing the college radio station you went to. So I don't even know if I knew how smart I was at the time, but it just felt so like something to do. And I mean, that really helped. I mean, just getting to know a lot of people for a few years, and they were so excited to like reconnect with their college radio station and stuff. So I kind of got an in with a lot of people so that when I eventually ended up back in Chicago media, I had people to reach out to help at least get me in the room.
What was the coming out experience like for you down in Champaign?
It was great. I'm really lucky overall. Like I knew I was gay when I was like 12 and this is such an embarrassing story, but that's what you share on podcasts, right? I think I knew that I was different. I didn't quite like have a word for it. I didn't know. I mean, I kind of had an idea. And I was watching a documentary of all things about Jeffrey Dahmer. And he said in a clip on a video, I knew I was gay when I was 12. And I ignore the rest of the Jeffrey Dahmer part. I was 12 when I was watching that. And I think it sunk in that I was like, oh, wait, you can actually know this. But of course, yeah, I hid it. I had girlfriends in high school. I, you know, present very quote unquote straight acting. Which I know some people take offense to. That's just who I am. And so like no one knew, which made it a very interesting experience. But my parents they were hippies in the 60s and they were always an open household of like, and they would, you know, teach us about, you know, the LGBTQ community, et cetera. I mean, not in like any strong-handed way, but I always knew that it was going to be okay. Which of course is a benefit that a lot of people don't have. But all of my friends in college were basically straight until the last year when I finally decided to come out. So it was an interesting experience. So I did what a lot of people do when they're gay. I would like slowly pick and choose a couple people to tell, usually drunk at a bar. And that bar was Murphy's Pub in Champaign.
I thought you were going to say Cam's, but
No. I was never a Cam's guy. But, and like my friends are, they kind of name it the John coming out booth. Cause I would take all of them over to this booth to tell them. Like they all learned about it years later that I did it the same way for everybody. Cause like, it's a really hard thing. And maybe it's a lot easier now. And it was certainly easier for me than it was 20 years before me. But in 2005, it was still, I mean, marriage was illegal and not even on the realm of political possibilities. And so I slowly told people one by one, until I kind of met a guy I wanted to date. And then I felt like, oh, well, I better tell people. So I drove home to Downers Grove to tell my parents first. And my mom, I was like, I got to tell you guys something serious. And my mom was like, oh, okay. And my dad's like, all right, what's up? And I said, I'm gay. And my mom said, oh, I thought you were going to say your younger brother got his girlfriend pregnant. So they were relieved that wasn't, because I think by then they had known. And then I did the most like new social media thing ever. Facebook used to have, you could say what you were interested in, men or women.
Right.
And I changed it on Facebook, went to bed, turned off my phone, turned off my computer, and left everything off for about 24 hours just because I was so scared. And then when I turned on my phone, I had, this is right when texting was starting, I was just littered with, it was like my birthday. It was like the greatest thing ever. So many people wrote nice emails and texts and stuff. And, you know, I had a really blessed coming out experience, all things considered. So,
I mean, that's dope. Like, cause you're right. Like a ton of people will tell you that their coming out experience to their close group, their circle, that's usually fine. But it seems like the world at large, there weren't like landmines that you were stepping into with this. Like, that's a really, like, that's a fantastic way to have something that you hold dear be public knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it was obviously reaffirming and great. I mean, even today, I still walk around with some trepidation because you just, coming out is, you know, it's a one big thing at one moment, but it's an everyday thing. I mean, every person you meet, and especially in our business, you never know. And like, when do you bring that up? Right.
Right.
Like, and like, maybe they don't need to know, but like, there comes a point where, you know, someone might crack a joke and then you're like, well, shit, now I got to say something, or now I need to let them know to avoid them further embarrassment because everyone else in the room knows, or something like that. So that's an interesting world. But I will say, I've been really blessed with all my employers that are like, when I got hired at WCIU, they knew, and I was told immediately to just be myself, like mention my boyfriend and then husband at the time on air, just do me. And same thing at WGN Radio, right? And that's big. I mean, WGN Radio has a wide array of listeners of age and demographic and political persuasion. And for them to say, yeah, say what you want, live your life. That's always been big. And same with the Blackhawks too. Never been a problem there, but you never know. So it's cool. I do feel very blessed. I wrote a letter to myself like when I really was like, I need to come out, but it still was a couple of years before I did. I still have that letter, and I wrote on there like, you know, like, hey, here, you know, you're gay, you know, and I wrote on there, I'm like, you'll never be married. You'll never have kids. You'll never get to work in TV and radio and be who you are, but that's okay. And like, I was trying to like come to terms with that, I think. And now reading that letter, it's like, man, the world has changed a ton, which is great. But I've also been just so lucky that I'm actually living a life I never, for a while there, I thought no chance I'd be able to live.
As an ally, I have an idea of what gay Chicago is. And I appreciate being occasionally like invited in, like Terry Himmert let me sit with her during the Pride Parade. And that was an experience. Like being on the float with Terry was an experience because we were going down Broadway and there were people like three flats that like saw Terry Himmert and they started crying. And I was just like, oh, like I knew that she was the queen. Like I mean, I know Terry Himmert's one of my favorite people and I knew that she was popular. But I didn't know it was like that. So as an outsider, an ally, but an outsider, what is it about Chicago that I think makes it a gay-friendly city?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is compared to a lot of places. I just want to say off the bat, too, we all have our own blind spots, too, even in the gay community. And even the LGBTQ community has a lot of reckoning to do within itself dealing with transphobia and racism. So I'm not trying to paint some picture that it's this amazing place. I think it is a great place to be gay, obviously. I just want to say that from the outset that we still have work to do even with our own community. But I don't know. It's so great to be, I mean, obviously Boys Town is a great neighborhood. Then there's a different bar for every sort of person. And it's a very welcoming place, I think, for straight people too, right? And we love when our allies are out there too. And we're obviously not a monolith, so it's hard to talk about
sure.
sort of like this. But like, I don't know. It's so nice to live in a city, and it's probably just the makeup of the city where like Enrique and I can like go to a bar and sit there, have a drink, watch a game as husbands. And it's like no one bats an eye, right? And I think that's the comfortable thing about Boys Town. And I think for the most part, in most parts of the city now, we could go almost anywhere, and that's the case. I mean, there's certain pockets maybe where you'd want to be on edge a little bit, but like, I don't know. I don't know what about it is. I think Chicago is like a, like we're this hardworking, in many ways, a blue collar city, right? We have that reputation, but I think we're always a city that regards people as like, hey, you live your life, you do the best you can do, and we're all in this together. And I feel like that is an attitude Chicagoans have. And I think that, you know, maybe some people need a little awakening on the gay and LGBTQ thing, but I think for the most part, Chicagoans are, you know, we're in this together. It's we got polar vortices to get through. We got 120 degree humid days to get through. Gay or straight, we'll figure this out together, man.
I'm glad that you brought up polar vortices, because I feel like, I mean, I know that you technically did weather, but I also think like if meteorology would have been your thing, it could have been your thing. Are you a meteorologist?
No, not a meteorologist, but I did, when I was 12, go to College of DuPage tornado spotter class with Tom Skilling. Because I was obsessed with weather as a kid.
Seriously, I mean, like, if you're going to be in a class, that's the guy who you want to be in a class with.
Right. So I was really into weather, and I know it rudimentary. I probably know more about the weather than the average person, and that's not a pat on the back. It's just because I read a lot about that stuff, and I had to. When the jam started, which was our morning show on WCIU, I was going to be the field reporter, and they had put on the press release. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this. They put on the press release for the jam, and we're going to tell weather in a creative new way on the show, but they actually hadn't figured out what they were going to do yet. So like 2 weeks before the show launched, they're like, you know, John, you're already out in the field. You know weather. We've had this conversation before. Can you present it in cool and different ways? And that was like the coolest challenge. I love doing that. Because I would, you know, give you a little of the weather, but it wasn't like any of the other stations. We barely even had like a radar system or anything. I would have Chicagoans join me and do the weather with me in unique ways. So if I was at a high school for game of the week, I'd have the Palms crew, you know, make cloud formations, lightning bolts, raindrops, the temperatures, all with their palms to do it in a fun, creative and different way. That's just one example. But like, yeah, I can't even believe, and it's a little embarrassing to say, that that's my Emmy. It's actually weather reporting.
I don't think it shouldn't be embarrassing to say. I always thought, man, you do a great job at that. And you did, like, you try to make it a fun thing. And that's key. Like, that's what people want. Like, that's what they want in the morning. I think that's why you succeed on television, is because you're fun. Like, you're smart and you're fun. And that combination is really hard to beat. So you should be super proud of that Emmy, no matter where it came from, because it's a cool thing to have. Like, I want to know about the jam, like, and working on that show. Explain to people how hard it is to do a morning show every day.
Yeah. I mean, the grind of it is crazy because a few things, the hours alone are crazy, right? And like, there's morning shows that started before us. So sympathies to the people on the B team at WGN who are on the air at 4.
Facts. Right?
That's insane. Or 4:30 at 7:52, or they may even be 4 now too. So the hours alone are crazy, and we didn't even have the worst of it. But you know, at WCIU, we are a smaller operation. So we didn't have like an afternoon and an overnight crew that was out there shooting news so that when you walk in the morning, you have some stuff, right? So like, if we were trying to be this balance of like lifestyle and news and all this and fun and great topics. So like, it was a 24-hour job, I felt like, in many ways, right? Because you do the show 6 to 8, and then we're going to have this guest do this segment. We're going to have that. You prep for those things. But then as like news broke through the afternoon, people are expecting you to talk about it in the morning, right? They're expecting you to have visual elements, have guests reacting to it. So like, our ragtag group, who we became really close with, we were always in communication all day, all afternoon. There's really not a time when you're off. And when you get there at 3, you're kind of building a show from scratch without maybe some of the resources that some of the big stations have. And while that is limiting, it's also freeing because we could play that, right? Kind of like how WGN admits and has fun with being that, you know, they have so many promos running now, and I love watching those guys on 9, just like how stupid the show is, right? How goofy it is and how they're not trying to be 2, 5, or 7. We kind of had even WGN cries and plays like they're the little brother or the little sister. We were like the cousin, right? That was like off the wall. We could kind of play into that while still trying to present a fun show. And I got to do all the different roles on that show over the 4-year run. So that was great. It was a real bummer when we had to go home and do it from our houses. And we still put together a fun show that then turned into an evening show. And it was a bummer when it had to be canceled, but I totally get the business side of it. And we still were at home when that happened. So I don't know. I feel like WCIU, whether it was You and Me, which is the show I started on, or The Jam, it was almost like my master's degree in TV, getting to do everything on the fly with real consequences and, you know, try and navigate a world that we're in.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Which is, of course, nothing what the Block Club Chicago show is.
Well, that's, I wanted to ask you about that. Like, am I going to see you regularly on the block? Because I think you add an element to it that's important.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so Brandon Pope, who I know you talked to recently, he's the host. I love B. Pope. And so I am kind of responsible. I have a podcast that I do. I do the Block Club Chicago podcast. I've known those people for years. I used to work over at DNA Info when it was owned by the Ricketts before they shut it down. And I do this podcast for Block Club called It's All Good. So when we were kind of like figuring out what my role was, it's half producer, and I kind of like coordinate between the two news operations. I kind of know all the Block Club reporters. We're all on a Slack channel. I can kind of be their conduit for, hey, do you mind giving us a report on this? Can we get more information on this? You take pictures or video of this, because they're all print digital reporters. And coordinating that with the TV side. Wow, this is really boring behind the scenes stuff. But
no,
then
we do on House of L.
Yeah, yeah. The other part that I love is we take the podcast and kind of turn it into a visual thing. And so it's the middle segment, the B block, as we call it, is called It's All Good. It's like 5 or 6 minutes. I'll have a well-produced package that really highlights great Chicagoans doing awesome stuff, right? Like, and that's what we do on the podcast too. And most of the time, it's everyday people. It's like your neighbors. You wouldn't even know they were doing this. You wouldn't know they were baking 1,500 meals every 4 weeks for people during the pandemic. You wouldn't know that they had a dream of opening up a yarn store on the South Side because there isn't one. And it took them 15 years to do it. And they did it. And you didn't know that it took that much heart and soul to do that. You wouldn't know about Razor Red, Terrence Wills, the guy who grew up in Rockwell Gardens in the projects, but he said it was like a paradise to him because he learned how to cut hair and got to cut Scottie Pippen's hair and grinded it out till he finally got his own shop. And to be able to tell those stories, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps talking about these people, is awesome. So to be able to do it in podcast format and then turn it into a TV format is really cool. But we're also playing with Pope hosts the show, but even the one we taped yesterday, it's like, well, we need a little bit of me versus Pope because we have a good little rapport back and forth.
That's what I was saying. Like you guys, yes. That element is really important, I think, to the success of the show.
It's in there. Don't worry. When you see episode 3, you'll already see it. It only took me 3 weeks to call Brandon Pope a loser. So in the loving way, It slipped out. We were talking about skateboarding and he said something so off base. I just had to call him out on it. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of what the show also needs to have. Right. And that's very Chicago. I mean, I know Brandon's not originally from Chicago, but I think he's an honorary Chicagoan. He's got the right vibe. And so, and who am I to judge? I grew up in Downers Grove, so I shouldn't even say that, but you know what I mean? Like, he's got that good Midwestern thing. And look, Block Club Chicago is an awesome organization to work for. They are a rising star, a star that's already risen basically in this media landscape. They're nonprofit, and knowing the co-founders really well, I mean, they just have their heart in such a great place and the stories are awesome.
Multi-platform is kind of where we're at in 2022. Did you have any problem like transitioning from being a radio person to a TV person to now being a podcast host and a digital producer of content that happens to go back on television?
No. And it's probably like you, Lawrence, and I'm sure a lot of other people out there. The me that is on the microphone on any platform is the same one you'd get without the microphone there. And that also sounds very easy, and it's not. That takes like years of just like being comfortable with your own voice and finding your own voice. So no, I honestly don't feel, I mean, of course you change your topics a little bit based on the medium you're on, and TV has, I got to put makeup on. I mean, there's different differences, but like, I don't know. It's like, it's all me. Like no matter which job I'm at, it's pretty much the same John Hansen that you're getting. But I also feel like I didn't want to pick a lane. I was told often, and you mentioned meteorology. There were many times I did consider like, just go get your meteorological degree. I can't even say that word, meteorological degree. And just be a TV weather guy. Who knows? You could rise the ranks, right? I have a fun personality. You know, maybe I'll go kick Conrad out of there at some point.
There Although you go.
He's not a meteorologist, is he?
I don't remember. He is.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
He is now. Okay. Yeah, for sure. I mean, he knows his stuff. But I can't, here's my dream world. And this is kind of what I'm living right now. I can't focus on anything for more than 3 or 4 hours without getting bored. So, and I can do it 5 days a week, but I need to switch within the day. Otherwise I just lose my mind. So like the thought of just doing weather reporting for the rest of my life is not something I want to do. I love doing it. And I'd do it again if someone needed it in some way, but like, I don't like pigeonholing myself anywhere. And I feel like I don't want to say my career suffer, but like, I don't have as big a profile as a lot of people out there in this media landscape yet. And I think it's because I've chosen a route that is maybe a little different than other people where, you know, I was at WCIU and then I was filling in at WGN radio. I could have easily maybe tried to go to a different radio station and be like, no, I'm going to be a radio host. Send me to a lower market. Let me build it up there. Come back to Chicago when I can get a full-time radio job. But I was like, nah, you know, I'm cool doing like WGN on the side and slowly growing. And now I have a show 5 days a week. So that worked out pretty well. At the U, right? Like, I mean, on a show that maybe isn't as watched as originally as 2579, trying to still continue to build that brand and do what I do and commit to it. Same thing with the Hawks. Like it takes some time to get people to get to recognize you. And Block Club Chicago, it's not like it's, you know, I mean, it's doing really well, but it's not like every person in the city knows what it is. So I don't know. People also ask me like, do you have a plan? Like what's your goal? And I don't know. I'd love to be the Price is Right host. Like that'd be a dream job, but like, I don't like to pick a lane and like try and go. I try and take the jobs I can get, say yes to them, work my ass off at them and see what happens next.
I think that we're at a place that it makes it hard to predict where the industry is going anyway. Like I used to kind of think of it in chunks of like 5-year plan, like that's out the window. And yeah. I think that now like 2-year plans are almost out the window. That's mm-hmm. kind of the space that we're in now.
Right. Right. Like, I mean, like talk radio still great in Chicago, right? Vibrant. That comes and goes. Right. I mean, I think we're good. Like TV, the change to digital. Oh, it's going to be all digital. And then CNN Plus gets canned after 3 weeks. Right. Like no one knows what's happening with that. And that's why I really like to have my toes or whatever in all 4 areas. And that is something that I guess if you say, do you have a plan? My plan is to always have a foot in radio, a foot in TV, an arm in digital and an arm in arena or in person or stand-up comedy, something where you actually can connect with people in person. And I feel like if I can kind of just like keep that trajectory going, it's going to be good. And let's be honest, in this business, you've experienced it. I've experienced it. Jobs go away.
Yep.
That income goes away. And I'm a cheap guy and I like to live frugally. And I know it drives Enrique crazy, but I also like, I probably get it from my parents, right? Like I'm like a super saver. And like, it worries me if I have only one income stream. So part of it is motivated by the need to always kind of have different pots.
We are very similar in that way. Like it's uneasy to have like one, even if it's a passive income stream, it's very uneasy to have just one. It's a really, really weird thing. And I think that does come from, you know, like what your parents are and probably what your grandparents are.
Yeah.
You know, like that probably plays a big role in it. Now, look, I work at a heritage sports radio station, which is a big deal. Score has been around for 30 years. It's fantastic. You got to triple that for WGN radio. What's it like to be at one of the heritage radio stations in America?
I will say that I'm never most comfortable. I'm never more comfortable than I am doing talk radio.
Facts.
I feel it's the best. I love the interaction with the callers. I call it radio magic. I'm sure you have the same. You know it when you're hearing it. You're like, holy cow, we got to a place. How do we get here? Throw out the next block. We're sticking on this. We found something. And that comes from sometimes good producing, sometimes good luck, but most importantly, being quick on your feet and feeling what that is. And the only reason I think I'm good at it, I hope I'm good at it, is that I grew up listening to talk radio all the time. Listen to the Cubs games on GN, kept it on. Listen to the Score. Listen to WMAQ. Listen to everything. Listen to BBM. And I would listen under my covers at night with the radio playing so that my parents wouldn't tell me to go to bed. And there is a sort of, it just is in my blood a little bit. And also when I started at WGN radio, it was as a fill-in guy. And most of the time it was overnight, and you want to fill 4 hours and you got maybe a news guy there live with you and no guests that want to come on live from 1 to 5 a.m. go. And boy, that's something that I look back now. And again, I'm like, I don't know if I'd want to do that now, but I did it then. And it really built up my confidence to just go with the flow and to feel, because like, I think that we've all heard talk radio hosts, and it's a hard gig, who, you know, rush from one topic to the next because they're not getting the calls, they're not getting this. And then there's almost like a panic, and listeners can feel that. And like, I just feel very lucky that I got trained in the overnight world of like, yeah, man, well, I got something to say. I got something to talk about. I hope you do too. Okay, no calls yet, but I'm going to milk this a little bit. I know this is good. And then you finally get in a rhythm and it's great. So to answer your question a long way, it's awesome. I've been so lucky. I worked for WPGU and I did some traffic, like for a company that did traffic for multiple radio stations. In fact, that's how I got my first on-air thing at WGN, but it's been WPGU in Champaign and WGN in Chicago. Mm. And I'm blessed that that's what it was. And that's what it's been.
John, I appreciate your time, man. I'm glad that we had the opportunity to do this. Cause I always look forward when I would pop up on WCIU of like working with you. Cause I think you're smart and you get it and you make it fun and you also make it welcoming for people to come in from outside the house. So like that's,
thank you.
That's something that I pay attention to when I'm invited places, and it helps. It truly does. Like it helps relax people when there are folks like that, that want to have everyone be a part of the experience.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, man. And, it's been great catching up with you, and thank you. And thanks for the listeners for engaging in my story. If they're still listening, you held on. Thank you.
Well, continued success and continue to keep, I keep diversify, man. I think that's the key in where we're at right now, but I appreciate you being on the podcast and sharing your experience with everyone.
Take care, Lawrence. I appreciate it.
John, be well, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for doing this.
You can see in that conversation why he is a sought-after personality. He has a lot of information, research. He's got an incredible way of thinking of things, and he's super smart. You want to get to the sauce? It's the sauce brought to you by Aurelio's, like the sauce of that conversation. Is John explaining the things that it takes to succeed and the willingness to make some sacrifices? He's sacrificing and has been sacrificing a lot of sleep for a long time. And I appreciate that about him. I appreciate his whole style, man. I'm glad that he felt comfortable enough to talk about his coming out process. And I also dig that for John, that finding himself meant staying in a place that was comfortable to him. Like that extra time that he spent in Champaign-Urbana, because he felt like he had built a universe for himself where he could be himself. And that takes some guts. He's just super smart, and I'm glad that he's succeeding at the level that he is. I always look around, and I'm looking like, who are the people that are similar to me when it comes to this stuff? And Cap's one of those people. Layla's one of those people. And John's one of those people. We probably feel more comfortable like in studios than we do in our own skin sometimes. But we like showing our skills and showing that we can do everything, that we can do TV and print and do radio and podcast, like all of that stuff. Like I see a lot of the things that I like about myself in John, and he's doing it at a super high level, and I truly respect that. I really do. I'm not quite ready. There's something that I want to tell you as a listener of House of L, but I'm not quite ready to tell you yet. There's just some more I's that need to get dotted and some T's that need to be crossed. But I will, this is what they call a tease in the business. I will tell you that when and if this happens, there'll be an entire episode of the podcast about it. Is that a tease enough for you? And it'll probably come out later this week. So, and oh, before I get back to the music, it's something that I'm really, really excited about. And I think you might be excited about it too. I appreciate your support on all of my platforms. Follow me on Twitter at Lawrence W. Holmes. I'm also on Instagram at Lawrence W. Holmes. Check out the show on The Score from noon until 2. And later on this week, there'll be some other things that we can add to that. Tease. Thanks for listening to the episode. I will talk to you soon. I promise. Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.